The Sports Page, Volume 1, Number 23. Hiya, fellas. Welcome to the Sports Page, 23rd edition. And here are the bold-type headlines. Ford Frick returns to New York after baseball conference. Zamperini Mile at IC4A meet. Dempsey wants discharged athletes to compete in sports. Column 1. The president of the National League, Ford Frick, has returned to New York from a series of Washington conferences. Frick says that American League president Will Herridge has returned to Washington and that no further trips to Washington are planned until the Work or Fight bill is passed or defeated. It has been learned that most baseball men favor the passage of some sort of a manpower bill, so that manpower control will be centralized in one government agency. Frick revealed that the Office of Defense Transportation did not ask for a 25% reduction in travel. The baseball officials agreed on that travel slash and volunteered to abide by it. Frick says that ODT Director Johnson was very pleased, and the National League president asserted there will be no drastic changes in the major league schedules. He estimated that 25% cut will mean a reduction of about 1 million passenger miles. Column 2. When the IC4A Track and Field Championships are held in New York's Madison Square Garden on March 3, a special one-mile invitational race will be run in honor of Louis Zamperini. The race will be known as the Louis Zamperini Invitation Mile. Zamperini was a former athlete at the University of Southern California and was a member of the United States Olympic track team in 1936. He has been reported missing in action. At the time of his disappearance in May 1943, Zamperini was a bombardier lieutenant in the Army Air Force, stationed somewhere in the South Pacific. Column 3. Former world's heavyweight boxing king Jack Dempsey has an idea that athletes who have been rejected for military service can do their bit for their country. He says they can do no better service than to take part in sports, which in turn builds up morale of the men overseas. Dempsey disclosed this idea while stopping off at San Francisco en route to an assignment in the Pacific War Zone. He looks very fit and fully able to go 20 rounds. The former Punch King could not disclose his Pacific destination. Dempsey wants to see all the sports kept going that are possible without hurting the war effort. Use all the four ifs you can in baseball and other games, he urges. Dempsey said that while he doesn't like to see a man able to shoulder a gun playing a game, nevertheless, if a man is unable to be in service, then athletes are doing their biggest bit toward the war effort by keeping sports alive. Dempsey pointed out that the biggest factor in morale among servicemen aboard ship and on foreign fronts is having a current sport topic to mull over, argue, and even bet on. Column 4. Speaking of sports on the battlefronts, the former Philadelphia Phillies Ironman pitcher, Master Sergeant Hugh Malkery, is organizing a serviceman sports program right in the heart of the battle area. He is in Manila and hopes to have some games rolling there shortly. Incidentally, 31-year-old Mulkey, was the first major league star to enlist, and he says he hopes to be back in Philadelphia in time for spring training next year. Column 5. The handsome young son of Billy Southworth, manager of the St. Louis Cardinals, lost his life when his plane plunged into the icy waters of New York Bay. He was an excellent ball player himself before the war and was a vital part of his father's life. In fact, old Billy never tired of talking about the lad he called my kid. Billy the Kid and the son of Billy the Kid were almost inseparable companions before the war during the period between baseball seasons. The old man spent many long hours teaching a strapping youngster how to handle his outfield job better. And it was one of his fondest ambitions that someday the kid would work for a team he managed. That dream might or might not have come true if Billy the Major had lived. You see, the kid had signed a contract with Hunt Stromberg to appear in the movies after the war, and he may have planned to quit baseball permanently. But on the other hand, when a fellow has baseball in his blood, it's pretty hard to lure him away from the diamond. And Major Billy really had baseball in his system. One of the happiest days of his life was the afternoon in October of last year when he sat in a box at Sportsman's Park in St. Louis to watch the final game of the World Series. He sat in that box straight and strong, and the sun sent little rays dancing off the gold Major's purple leaves on his shoulders. There were service ribbons and medals pinned on his breast that day. Major Billy was proud of those bits of metal and cloth, But he was even more proud of something else. You could see that pride in his eyes as he looked out toward third base, where a little man with graying hair and bright eyes was walking up and down. The pride swelled to the bursting point when the little man turned to Major Billy and waved. The handsome young major waved back at his father and grinned. Turning to someone in the box with him, he said, "Quite a guy, isn't he?" Billy the Major got the thrill of his lifetime when his pop led the Cardinals to victory in their final game of the World Series. He was even more thrilled because it was the first time he had seen the old man in action in the series. And when the Cardinals won the 1942 pennant, young Bill was training in Texas to be a pilot. And when they won again in 43, little Bill was at a bomber base in England. And when he walked off the field in St. Louis last October with an arm thrown around his father's shoulders, there was no way of knowing that within 4 months he would lie in a watery grave in New York Harbor. Now Billy the Kid has lost his co-pilot, and the going is likely to be rough, but he has one consolation. Billy Southworth knows that his St. Louis kids made Billy the boy's last baseball game his happiest, that Indian summer day in Sportsman's Park. Well, fellas, that's 30 for this edition. See you tomorrow evening with Volume 1, Number 24 of The Sports Page. The Sports Page, Volume 1, Number 24. Hiya, fellas. Welcome to The Sports Page, 24th edition. And here are the bold type headlines. Malamutes lose first game in Anchorage. Hogg and Lidman fail to show up for AAU meet. Henry Armstrong finishes autobiography. And baseball's spring training plans go ahead. Column 1. The lads from Fairbanks took a heartbreaking drubbing last night in Anchorage when the Eagles eked out a 23-25 win over the Malamutes in an overtime contest. Coach Norris's quintet led until the final seconds of action when Johnny Irvin sunk a long one to tie up the game and force it into an overtime period. With the score 22-22, both teams dug in fast, with Cliff Berglund lost when he was overcome by a leg cramp. The Malamutes managed to chalk up one more point on a foul toss, but the Eagles of Anchorage evened this and added another field toss to bring them victory honors. The final score was 23-25. Both teams meet again tonight. Column 2. While the future of organized baseball is by no means certain, the clubs are going ahead with spring training plans. Oakland of the Coast League has arranged an 11-game training schedule to start on March 9, 4 days after the Oaks begin practice at Boys Springs. The most striking fact about the preseason opponents is that 10 of the 11 are service clubs. Oakland will meet Portland at San Jose on March 11 in the only non-service competition scheduled by the Oaks. Two veteran Hollywood baseballers may not be on hand for the start of the baseball season. Pitcher Earl Escalante and catcher Jim Hill have been classified 1A by their draft boards. Column 3. It's beginning to look like Gunder Haig and Håkan Lidman stopped somewhere in the middle of the Atlantic and asked themselves, is this trip necessary? In any event, it looks like Haig and Lidman will not be participating in the AAU championships tonight at New York's Madison Square Garden. Haig's failure to arrive in the United States has been quite a blow to AAU officials. The capacity of Madison Square Garden for a track meet is 16,000. The New York Athletic Club meet attracted 11,000, and the Millrose Games drew 14,000. The AAU officials had been counting on Haig and Lidman to assure a capacity crowd. As a matter of fact, the AAU officials were so sure that Haig and Lidman would compete in tonight's meet that they made a mistake in promoting the event. At first, they built their advance promotion around Haig and Lidman. It was only during the past week that the AAU officials have been asserting that the meet will be a good one even without Haig. As a matter of fact, it may be. Certainly, it'll be the best of the indoor meets to date. The entry list is the largest in history with 256 starters. There will be considerable interest in Bill Badgert, a 230-pound shot putter from the University of Missouri. While in New York, Badgert hopes to audition for the Metropolitan Opera. Badgert's singing ability does not come under the heading of sports, so we'll refrain from commenting on his chances of landing with the Met. As far as the shot put is concerned, Badgert will find a formidable competitor in Frank Burst of New York Athletic Club. Another interesting event will be the pole vault. Sergeant Milt Padway of the Army has had things his own way in the Eastern meets thus far this season, but he'll be up against John Schmidt of Ohio State tonight. The result may be a surprise for Padway. Column 4. Well, all kinds of interesting incidents arise in high school basketball games. And the story of one of these games is told by Paul McClelland of Station KHMO in Hannibal, Missouri. McClelland is a registered basketball official in Missouri, and he was called upon to officiate in the tourney at Palmyra. One of the games in the girls' section, a contest between Canton and LaBelle, ended in a tie. The rules for girls do not provide for overtime play in the case of a tie. However, the two coaches and tournament officials agreed on a 3-minute overtime period. Each team scored 2 points in the overtime period, so the game remained tied. It was then suggested that the teams play a so-called sudden death period, with the first team scoring one or more points being declared the winner. However, the coaches would not agree on this proposal, and it was decided to continue playing 3-minute overtime periods. By the time the fifth overtime period had ended, the LaBelle team had lost all but 5 of its players because of personal fouls. The game then was held up until a girl in the audience could don a uniform. This girl was on the eligibility list, but she didn't expect to play, so she didn't bother to dress. Canton finally won the contest in the sixth overtime period, and then went on to win the championship. Another oddity concerning that game between Canton and LaBelle is that the captains of the two teams are first cousins. Column 6. Well, Henry Armstrong has finished writing the story of his life in a book, which depicts his struggle from 3 world championships. But Henry has left unanswered the question asked by many. Why is the Los Angeles Negro still fighting, 3 years after he lost his last title? Armstrong suffered the first knockout of his brilliant career as featherweight, lightweight, and welterweight champion on the night of January 17, 1941. Fritzy Zivic stopped him in the 12th round in New York City. Little Henry said he was through with fighting. One knockout was enough. Hadn't he scored 26 knockouts in 27 fights in 1937? He knew what happened to fighters once they began going downhill. But the war took many of the top-notchers from the game, and Henry saw a chance to make some money. And Armstrong started a highly successful comeback. Successful, at least, from the financial standpoint. Armstrong says he has earned $1 million in the 15 years he's been boxing. But since the war, he has made more money than during the years he was a champion. For a long time, Henry spent money about as fast as he made it. In recent years, he said he is fighting only to pay his taxes. California's boxing commissioners once barred Armstrong on the ground that further damage to his ring-scarred eyes might cause him to become a blind man. But Henry has been fighting recently in his native state. As a matter of fact, he lost his last bout to Chester Slider in Oakland. Naturally, there's a profit angle to Armstrong's book. But there's a job coming up that Henry won't get paid for, and he doesn't want any money for it. The one-time triple champion soon will head for the European War Theater with a group that may include several other outstanding Negro athletes. Sprinter Jesse Owens and football star Kenny Washington among them. Henry is glad to get the chance to box for our fighting men, and they'll like him. It's always a real fight when Armstrong is in the ring. Well, fellas, that's 30 for this edition. See you Monday night, 10:40, with Volume 1, Number 25 of the Sports Page.
Zero 0600 Greenwich Meridian Time. This is your Army reporter, Private John Tillman, with the news of the world from the United States. For you men and women of the armed forces of the United Nations. This news is compiled by the Army News Service and is broadcast by the Armed Forces Radio Service. The Japanese capital of Tokyo is undergoing another visit from United States carrier planes. A communique from Fleet Admiral Nimitz on Guam says the carrier task force under Vice Admiral Mark Mitzger has returned to action against targets in and around Tokyo. An enemy broadcast during the raid says that it is even heavier than the attacks made on Tokyo by American carrier planes on February 16 and 17. The Japanese estimate they're being hit by about 1,600 United States planes. The United States Navy so far has given no hint of the maximum striking power of the great carrier fleet. The task force is part of the 5th Fleet, commanded by Admiral Raymond Spruance. Other fleet units are still supporting the United States Marines on Iwo Island, some 750 statute miles south of Tokyo. The Marines have advanced 300 to 500 yards and now hold about one half of Iwo with their forward positions about halfway across the Japanese fighter field. They're meeting very fierce resistance and late model enemy weapons. All areas crossed have been heavily mined. The enemy has resisted to the full extent of his armament, and here are some of the things included in that armament. The Japanese are using rocket bombs weighing about 1,000 pounds. They have an anti-tank weapon similar to the American bazooka. The Marines infiltrated through enemy positions, which included reinforced blockhouses and pillboxes with 4-foot walls. In a single area of about 400 by 500 yards on the east coast of Iwo, United States Marines neutralized about 100 caves between 30 and 40 feet deep. However, the advance is paid off immediately in a marked decrease of Japanese artillery fire into the interior of the American area.